3, capital intensive technologies also score over labor intensive technologies in as much as these being more productive give rise to large surpluses for additional investment. As such, these technologies become a continuous source of additional employment. 4. Since capital intensive industries ensure high wages, these lead to higher demands for wage goods. This in turn leads to the generation of employment in consumer goods industries. It is thus clear that while one aims at more employment, the solution is not simply that of choosing labor-intensive activities. One has, in fact, to choose the right mix of technologies which gives maximum employment at higher wages and which provides surplus for further investment. Now coming to the next remedy, heading Special Employment Programs. The remedies suggested above amount to employment generation through a fast growth of economy as well as an expansion of capital intensive biased activities. This is in a sense of ultimate solution of the problem. However, till the economy matures to a level where everyone finds job as described above, it is necessary as an interim measure to undertake special employment programs for those who do not benefit from this type of growth. In the short run, the number of persons to be helped in this way will be large indeed, because as the experience of the past proves, the percolation effects of such a type of growth would be too small to provide jobs to many. The need for the supplemental programs is all the more important for the poor people residing mostly in the rural areas and small towns. These people do not have the necessary physical strength, adequate elementary education or skill, nor do they have sufficient productive assets such as land, animals, equipment, etc. There are then many seasonally unemployed. Mostly these are associated with agriculture, who need supplementary seasonal employment. Quite many, though employed, such as artisans, do not earn enough to meet their needs for even necessities. The different types of people for whom special employment programs are needed are landless agricultural laborers, marginal farmers, village artisans, tribal people living in remote areas of the country, as also people in the hilly areas. The employment programs have to be such as suit a specific group of people and specific areas. The employment programs have to be, the programs may be in the form of direct employment, as on rural capital works, or these may be in the form of providing assets like animals, sewing machines, hand or power driven looms, etc. Or these may be in the form of providing inputs to those already working in some jobs. Or these may be in the form of supply of infrastructure facilities like marketing, credit, etc. to help them expand their activities or raise the quality of their products. And the next and the last remedy is manpower planning. For achieving employment for all, it is necessary also to manage human resources in a scientific manner. This is essential to ensure that while employment is promoted, development of the economy is also realized. This requires measures of various types. One, outside the narrow concept of manpower planning as related only to the demand and supply of skilled personnel, it is essential to adopt effective remedies to cut down the growth rate of population. This will no doubt reduce the growth rate of labor supply only after some time, but it will make for a proper setting for the adoption of an appropriate employment policy and solution of employment. 2. The supply of skilled labor needs to be tailored to the requirements of the rate and pattern of employment-oriented development. This should also take care in the imbalances which mark the current scene, wherein one finds excess in certain lines and shortage in others. 3. While high-level skill formation through education and training will be confined to a small proportion of labor force, it is essential to improve upon the capabilities for development of the vast mass of people. This requires several interrelated measures such as provision of adequate education, training for some jobs, etc. 4. In providing employment under specific programs, it is necessary to ensure that these accord with the characteristics of the targeted group or area, as also with the overall development plans for the various sectors. This will make such schemes useful for labor and for the furtherance of the development of the country. So, the remedies, the suggested remedial measures are: first, expanding volume of work; second, raising capital formation; third, appropriate mix of production techniques; fourth, special employment programs; and the last is manpower planning. Now, coming to the next heading, that is government's employment policy. After having dealt with the types, magnitude, and the causes of unemployment, as also its solutions, we take up government's employment policy. As part of this theme, we first dilate upon the approach and objectives of the policy and the programs or measures adopted by the government. This will enable us to critically evaluate the same. Approach and objectives is the next subheading of government policies. All through planning, since the first plan, government has stressed the urgent need of eliminating unemployment. As unemployment increased with the passage of time, government too stepped up its efforts in fighting the evil. An overview of the policy can be had by looking at its main features. The subheading is many-sided approach. This is the first approach. Since unemployment situation is many-dimensional, the government policy has been multifaceted. It is in a general way, of course, the policy expects employment generation to take place as a consequence of growth. However, within this broad frame, there are sub-policies pertaining to the various forms of unemployment, as also to the various groups that suffer from it. There is, for instance, a special emphasis on the reduction of underemployment, as it constitutes major part of unemployment. And since this is a resultant of many causes, solutions of varied nature have been provided for. Underlying all these solutions is the provision for more work, income, assets, etc. For the underemployed who either do not have full-time work or do not have it throughout the year, or do not have enough assets, etc. Similarly, for the underemployed, as also for many in open unemployment, the policy provides for training and equipping them largely for self-employment. Again, since the problem of unemployment is most widespread in villages, there are many employment schemes mainly for the rural people. Besides, there are programs to help weaker sections of population who are the worst sufferers from the evil of unemployment. The second approach, that is the second subheading, is greater emphasis on self-employment. An important aspect of the policy is its emphasis on the creation of facilities for self-employment. This is largely for two reasons. In the first place, it is recognized that the expansion of wage salary employment in the public sector and the private organized sector is not expected to absorb any significant part of the labor force. Secondly, even at present, the majority of workforce is self-employed at about 54%, as against 46% who work on wages and salaries. Although employment is in all these categories will increase a high priority of priority is accorded to the generation of self-employment. Accordingly, the policy aims at training of skills, supply of inputs, marketing of products, extension of loan facilities, etc., so as to equip people for self-employment. The policy has also identified the areas in which this type of employment is mostly found and can be increased.
These are, for example, agriculture and allied activities, village and small industries, and the unorganized sector of non-farm occupations. The third approach is assent on productive work and asset creation. Another characteristic of the policy is its emphasis on the productive employment. This implies two things. One, the priority is for the programs which result in output or income. Such an approach is non-inflationary in as much as it adds to goods and services to match payments to workers. Two, preference is given to schemes which lead to the creation of assets. This adds to capital stock at present and ensures output flows in the future. As such, there is only little place for employment schemes for the sake of employment only, such as it is in the schemes which are in the nature of relief measures adopted in unexpected contingencies like drought. There is again no room for doles or any regular or significant scale to provide money without work. No doubt in schemes like National Rural Employment Program, and landless rural employment guarantee scheme, a part payment to workers is made in kind, namely wheat and rice at subsidized rates. But this is far from the dole, for this is paid for productive work and is meant to keep the real wages up at a certain level. The fourth approach is employment generation. In respect of the employment generation, the policy has largely been to estimate the employment that would result from the growth of various sectors envisaged in various plans, rather than setting of employment targets. The seventh plan, for example, calculated the employment potential to grow at 4% per year as a result of the targeted levels of economic activity in the 5-year period of 1985 to 1990. The eighth plan, which was from 1992 to 1997, this projected employment to increase at the rate of about 3%, and the ninth plan from 1997 to 2002, this expected the employment to increase at the rate of 2.5% per annum. While projections rather than targets are made for the economy, in case of some special employment programs meant for the weaker sections of the population, like the National Rural Employment Program, Rural Landless Employment Guarantee Program, now merged in the Jawahar Rozgar Yojana, targets are fixed. These programs have, however, been envisaged as interim measures to help the disadvantaged sections of people till they find work in the general development processes of the economy. Till now, we covered approach and objectives of eliminating unemployment. The first approach was many-sided approach. Second, greater emphasis on self-employment. Third, ascent on productive work and asset creation. Fourth, employment generation. Now, we come to the programs and measures. Since the policy aims at reducing unemployment of various types, the programs devised and measures adopted have been many and of varied nature. These may be studied under the following heads. First one, employment associated with growth. In respect of employment related to the expansion of economic activities, much was expected from the increase in the volume of work itself. In quite a number of cases, deliberate choices have been made in favor of labor-intensive projects. These include the medium or small or ancillary units, which normally are labor intensive. These have been promoted through several measures: reservation of large number of products exclusively for the small sector, preferential buying of their products by the government, supply of inputs at concessional prices, facilities for marketing of their products, etc. Besides, quite a high priority has been accorded to agricultural development through large allocations for irrigation, improvements in inputs, etc. More jobs have sought to be created through increases in crop intensity, extension of new technologies to low productivity regions, etc. The pace of mechanization, for example, in respect of agriculture, has also been regulated to ensure that the labor absorption is not adversely affected. Activities with high employment content, like construction of roads, houses, etc., have also been promoted. Special efforts have also been made to promote a pattern of investment and production which could help in expanding employment opportunities for the mass of unemployed in the country. The second program is Special Employment Program. A number of special employment programs for self and wage employment have been in operation in rural and urban areas. The Rural Self-Employment Scheme merged into an all-inclusive scheme, christened Swarn Jayanti Gram Swarojgar Yojana, that is SGSY, since April 1999, include Integrated Rural Development Program, that is IRDP, training of rural youth for self-employment, that is TRYSEM, supply of improved toolkits to rural artisans, SITRA, Ganga Kalyan Yojana, that is GKY, and development of women and children in rural areas, that is DWCRA, the wage employment schemes, Jawahar Gram Samriddhi Yojana, JGSY, include the former such programs
as the Jawahar Rozgar Yojana and the Employment Assurance Scheme, that is EAS. Some of these schemes are meant for the poor, like the landless agricultural labor, vulnerable people of the drought-prone areas, etc. An important feature of these schemes is that these are area and or group specific. Another feature is that most of these schemes are target-oriented. These also provide direct employment on projects like rural capital works. Most of the projects under these schemes are labor-intensive, quick maturing and result in the creation of production assets. Assistance to the self-employed is given both in financial and non-financial forms. In the case of wage employment, in many cases, payments are made partly in cash and partly in kind, namely in wheat and rice at concessional rates, to ensure a minimum level of real wage or income. There are also special employment programs for the urban areas, largely to provide self-employment and wage employment to the educated unemployed. These include Prime Minister's Rozgar Yojana, that is PMRY, also extended to rural areas since 1994-95. Swarna Jayanti Shahari Rozgar Yojana, that is SJSRY, which includes the former Nehru Rozgar Yojana, as also Urban Basic Services for the Poor and the Prime Minister's Integrated Urban Poverty Alleviation Program. The third program is Employment for the Educated. A separate mention may be made for the educated both in the rural areas as also in the urban areas. In general, all the measures for development will also create large opportunities of employment for the educated. For example, in case of the schemes for the primary sector, there is considerable scope for the educated. The different type of personnel needed in thousands pertain to village level workers for extension work, agriculture research, agriculture census and farm management. Schemes like Operation Flood, fishery projects, etc. will take in a very large number of educated persons for infrastructural support, technical input, supply for milk processing operations, etc. Again, there are large openings for these people in the block level planning, which requires personnel for survey, planning, monitoring, evaluation, etc. Minimum needs program will absorb various kinds of professionals in medicine, nutrition, etc. No less important are the expanding of job opportunities in the service sector. As a result of increasing production in the commodity sector, that is agriculture and manufacture, there is bound to be large employment for the educated in such fields as processing, marketing, trading, banking, etc. The fourth program is manpower planning. Alongside expansion of employment, some measures have also been taken to ensure proper development of human resources and their rightful deployment. For example, through district level agencies, provision is made for the preparation of manpower budget for the district. This gives information on the needs as also availabilities of various personnel. These agencies are also to tackle the problem of educated unemployment. All this is intended to make sure that government programs are properly evaluated in terms of employment creation. Equally importantly, provision has been made for some sort of balancing between demand for and supply of skilled manpower, particularly in the spheres of medicine, engineering, etc. Employment exchanges also help in the provision of necessary data for manpower planning. These exchanges also render service in the placement of persons who get themselves registered with them. These also provide services in respect of vocational guidance, employment counseling, and dissemination of occupational information. Now we have covered programs and measures for reducing unemployment of various types. First one was employment associated with growth. Second, special employment programs. Third one was employment for the educated. And fourth one, manpower planning. Now, we will continue with critical evaluation. Having described the government's employment policy, it is appropriate that we make an assessment of the same. This we do in two stages. In the first stage, we analyze the working of the policy in terms of its achievements and failures. In the second stage, we shall examine the policy itself. First thing is some employment generation. As for the working of the policy is concerned, there are some successes to its credit. Equally significantly, there are failures too. We mentioned both to have a balanced view of the results. As for the successes, one may mention two important achievements. First, there is undoubtedly an increase in employment. But for this, the unemployment situation would have been worse still. The increase in employment has taken place in all the sectors of the economy since 1951, particularly in the recent times, during 1983 to 1994. Employment has grown at an average rate of 2.04%. Between 94 to 2000, however, the rate of growth of employment has declined to less than 1%. The contribution of the organized sector in the absorption of labor has declined sharply. The rate of growth of employment in this sector has declined from 1.20% per annum during 1983 to 94 to 0.53% during 94 to 2000. The growth rate of employment in the public sector in the later period, that is 94 and 2000, has in fact been negative. For 98 and 99 and the year 99 and 2000, the overall rate of growth of employment in the organized public and the private sector has been negative. Now, the second point in critical evaluation is some care for the poor and the weak. Second, quite a significant part of employment generated has benefited the poor and the weaker section of the population. This became possible largely because of the specially designed programs of work or jobs for the vulnerable sections of the society. These programs, such as Integrated Rural Development Program, National Scheme of Training of Rural Youth for Self-Employment, etc. These programs did achieve much by way of providing work and training for the underemployed or unemployed, as also income-earning assets like land, animals, etc., and inputs like raw material, credit, etc., to those working on their own. As a result, there was some improvement in the income or employment situation of the poor and the very poor. Quite a number of them were taken above the poverty line. Now the third point is continuing grim situation. However, the improvement in the employment situation has been too inadequate for the grim unemployment problem. While employment grew at 2.04% between 1983 and 94, the labor force increased at 2.05%. Between 1994 and 2000, this gap between the growth of labor force and unemployment, the growth of labor force is 1.03% and unemployment rate is 0.98%. This gap between these two, that is the labor force and the unemployment, has increased further. As a result, the backlog of unemployment has risen. It has been estimated at 23 million persons as on April 1, 1999. It had increased from 10 million in 1977 and 1978. This situation is unlikely to improve in the 9th plan period, that is from 1997 to 2002. With employment growing at a lesser pace than the growth in the labor force, a highly unsatisfactory aspect of the employment situation is the deceleration in its growth rate in recent years. The growth rate at 2.17% during 1978 and 1983 declined to 1.5% during 1983 and 88. The bad feature of this trend is that this deceleration has been particularly large in manufacturing and service sectors, which should have provided employment on an increasing rate. The growth rate in their cases fell from 3.76% to 2.18% and from 4.49% to to 2.66% respectively. In the case of agriculture, which provides employment to the large bulk of labor force, the growth rate of employment has been very low at around 0.92%, 1978 and 1988,
and is reported to be negative during 1994 and 2000. Another dark spot in this dismal picture is the large unemployment among the educated persons at about 12%. This involves not only wastage of human resources, but also of the resources which have gone in their education and skill formation. Add to these figures the all-pervasive fact that in the case of large, many particularly in the rural areas, the disguised invisible unemployment continues to be rampant. The large number below the party line is one important proof of this inadequacy of work. After having taken up the consequences, good and bad, of the government's policy, we now deal with the policy itself. We discuss first its plus points and then its weaknesses. Positive aspects of the policy. The broad perception of the employment generation since the inception of planning has largely been correct. In support of this, one may cite the following four components of the policy, which, when read together, seem to favor employment generation on a major scale. 1. The planning since the second plan has been geared to the long-term perspective of full employment at higher incomes. It was long-term in two vital respects. In the first instance, it was rightly realized that the ultimate solution of the unemployment problem lay in the development of modern industries. It was so because the demand for the industrial goods is very income elastic, that is, demand for industrial goods rises alongside rise in the incomes, and therefore increasing opportunities of employment become possible in this sector and also in service sector along with it. The same cannot, of course, be said about agriculture, in whose case the percentage expenditure of family incomes tends to be low at higher incomes. In the second place, it was again rightly thought that the priority should in the first instance be given to the capital goods industries. These industries add to the productive capacity as also to the infrastructure of the economy. As a result, after some time, the economy becomes capable of producing industrial consumer goods on a massive scale. Capital goods industries, as also infrastructure like railways, communication, etc., these are capital goods industries, are however more capital intensive or less employment intensive. In the initial stage of planning, one could of course opt for employment intensive industries producing consumer goods. This could provide more employment in the short run, but at lower incomes. Full employment at higher incomes could, however, be raised after very many years. Further, the achievement of self-reliance in the absence of capital goods industries would have become very difficult. The choice in favor of capital goods industries thus meant strengthening of the economy and high income employment at a later stage. Second point we discuss about the policy is, while planning initially opted for less employment intensive modern industries, provision was made in the policy to promote labor intensive small scale and cottage industries, as also to an extent agriculture, in particular in the food grain sector, for employment reasons, as also for the production of consumer goods for which capital goods were inadequate. The third point is, as the employment implication of the capital goods industries were small, and also because the employment effects of small growth were inadequate, special employment programs were devised to provide jobs or work to the rural people and other vulnerable sections of the population. Fourth point is, in promoting employment, it was ensured that self-employment, which constituted a major portion of the situation, grew at a faster rate than the wage or salary employment. All in all, the employment policy rightly sought to provide jobs of work in the industrial sector and at higher income or level, although in the long run. Special efforts were also made at employment creation till the long-term solution materializes. In the meantime, capacity creation was promoted. Now we come to the weaknesses of the policy. However, all is not well with the policy. In this connection, we may mention two principal faults of the policy. One concern is its unsatisfactory implementation. Second is about the inadequate employment orientation of planning. We discuss each one separately. First, in respect of implementation, there has been two principal weaknesses in the policy. In the first place, the failures lay in the long-term slow growth of the economy. While capacities were created, these were not used to the full. Industrial sickness became quite widespread. In fact, in the industrial sector, there was retrogression in growth since the mid-60s until very recent years. Small-scale and cottage industries, as also agriculture, grew at modest rates. In the second place, the fault lay in the poor execution of special employment programs. Resources meant for these programs were not properly utilized. The benefits did not reach fully to the targeted groups of population. Many work creation and asset distribution programs turned out to be slow-growing. Secondly, as for contents of the planning are concerned, these have been weak in its employment orientation. In the first place, even with capital-intensive development, employment could have been given a higher berth. But it was not the case. Full employment was not mentioned in any plan, not even in perspective plans except in the 9th plan. The objectives were stated as maximum employment or progressive reduction in unemployment, etc. It was never a time-bound program, nor a quantified one, except in case of the recently devised special employment programs. In the second place, the economic policy encouraged capital-intensive investment and capital-intensive production or growth through special incentives and paid inadequate attention to the promotion of labor-intensive efficient technologies and labor-intensive product mix. Third, there is not much that can absorb labor surpluses to the full, even in special programs. Till recently, there was little, in fact nothing, which contemplated planning with labor as the most important first resource to be fully deployed or employed for development. Fourth, till very recently, even manpower planning for the educated or skilled personnel had been too inadequate. There is, again, a lack of comprehensive manpower budgeting in terms of various types of skills needed, the skills creating capacity, their matching, etc. All in all, the policy, though good in certain important respects, was faulty in implementation and in perception. By this, we have completed the positive aspects of the policy and the weaknesses of the policy. Now we come to the employment of surplus labor. Having taken up the subject of unemployment in general, we may now discuss the specific problem of surplus labor. As mentioned above, a very large segment of unemployment is disguised. A part of it is taken as equivalent to surplus labor as it can be withdrawn without causing a fall in the output. It is mostly to be found in the traditional rural activities like agriculture. In respect of the use of this type of labor, several ideas exist in the economic literature. Among them, the two important ones are those associated with Nerx and Lewis. Nerx regards this labor a potential saving useful for capital formation. Lewis considers it as a source of unlimited labor supply at constant wages helpful for raising surpluses for investment. Now we look at Nerx's regard that this labor as a potential saving. Nerx, in his Problems of Capital Formation, regards the surplus labor as equivalent to saving. It is argued that all persons currently engaged in agriculture are not needed to maintain current levels of production, but all of them are consuming. Hence, consumption remaining the same, the unwanted laborers can be withdrawn from agriculture and used for capital formation. This agriculture may be said to possess a labor force which represents a sort of saving, though not being utilized for the creation of capital assets. This saving, since it is in the form of labor, cannot be stored. It is labor time which, so long as it is not converted into capital goods, is wasted. These laborers continue to consume and do nothing productive, although their unemployment is disguised. Now we look at obstacles and limitations of its use. Theoretically, it is conceivable that such a potential saving exists in India in the form of disguised unemployment in rural areas. But when it comes to making use of it for the creation of capital assets, one faces certain difficult problems, some of them being extraordinary. We may list the major hurdles in the way of using this surplus labor for capital formation. The first one is the identification and measurement problems. The first requisite for any program of labor utilization is to identify such labors and know the number available. But unfortunately, it is neither possible to identify such labor conceptually nor measure even roughly the magnitude of saving represented by it. In agriculture family, labor is widely prevalent, so that almost every member of the family contributes to farm work, making it difficult to separate essential from non-essential laborers. Again, the nature of agricultural operations is such that at certain times, example during sowing and harvesting, large number of workers are required. And at other times, example during post-harvesting periods and before sowing, the number of workers needed is very much less. As such, it is not possible to state how many people in agriculture and for how long are surplus. And the second limitation or the obstacle is organizational hurdles. There are then certain organizational problems. Some of them are of extraordinary nature. Among these, the major ones are the following. In the first place, it involves a stupendous and often intractable task of organizing collective use of this labor force. These workers are so dispersed over wide areas and their availability is so irregular and uncertain that it is rather difficult to get them together. Besides, being non-industrial in character with no experience and knowledge of working as a disciplined workforce, they are not amenable to sustained teamwork, which is essential for industrial activity. The second difficulty associated with this is the need to ensure that total consumption remains the same. It means that either these laborers continue to live and visit their old places to consume what they were eating before, or the same consumption goods are brought to their places of work. In the first case, asset formation should take place without any cash payment. And in the second case, wages may have to be paid out of funds collected from such taxes as land tax, which reduce correspondingly the demand for food of those who are left behind on the land. Both these courses are beset with intricate problems. The former with the question of getting free labor, as for example under Shramadan, or payment in a form that doesn't put cash in their hand, and the latter involves the formulation of a suitable fiscal policy. An aspect of this problem of ensuring the use of potential saving with the same total consumption is the need to prevent the consumption level of the people left on land from going up. There is a real possibility that those who remain behind may start consuming more than before. If this leakage from the existing consumption pool takes place, then extra consumption goods will have to be formed for the surplus labor. Such a thing will defeat the very purpose of using the potential saving. Third, the labor force left behind on farms needs to be so organized that an adequate volume of work continues to be performed. At the existing level of techniques, there is the need for a large number of laborers. A few critics of the theory of potential saving question the very validity of it on this basis. They opine that techniques remaining the same, any withdrawal of farm workers will lead to reduction in total production. In any case, there will be the need to so redeploy remaining laborers that the existing volume of production is maintained. Till now, we were covering employment of surplus labor. In that, obstacles and limitations of surplus labor use, we have covered 2 points, that is identification and measurement problems and the organizational hurdles. The remaining points to be covered under this are difficulties of suitable productive works, the second one is devising appropriate mode of remuneration, and the deficiency of wage goods.